thinking about Tosef, the time that we have last about Tosef is no jokes intended on this point, but it's a very expansive topic. There's a lot to say and a lot of sugyas that touch upon it. It's something which comes up in Amistad in a number of ways. Before talking about it, though, I just want to get, no pun intended, Hosafa to last week's shir and yesterday's shir. Because last week we were talking about Shemei Ka'ona, and we basically had finished what we planned on talking about. We mentioned at the end that we should say a little bit about Sfira Sa'omer, being that we are in Sfira Sa'omer. So we did say a drop about it, but then yesterday, when almost all of you were here, so we talked about the sugya of Sfira Sa'omer. So just to combine those two for a minute to kind of bring that together before starting a new topic, I'll give you a particularly labedic question. So you should enjoy this one. But just to keep in mind what we had seen as building blocks. So we went through the discussion of Shemei Ka'oneh, and we basically saw that there were two routes to understanding what's going on. Either that you fulfill the mitzvah by listening, because listening is considered to be like speech. So the halacha sees it as if you are talking yourself. And then we discussed the other possibility, that maybe it's not as if you are talking, but through listening, you somehow create a connection with the person who is speaking, and you fulfill the mitzvah through him. So if he is fulfilling the mitzvah, whatever details he has accrue to you as well, and you fulfill the mitzvah that way. Right? So far, so good. That's the 1 minute version of those 3 days. And we mentioned that there is a machlokas when it comes to Sfira Sa'omer, because Sfira Sa'omer, so the Gemara has a drasha, usfart and lachem, sheyehei Sfira lekol echad v'yachad mikem, that everyone has to do their own Sfira. So that led some, as a discussion of Magen Avraham, it led some to raise the question that, okay, so maybe that means no Shemei Ka'omer, you can't fulfill Sfira with Shemei Ka'omer, because the Gemara specifically says everyone's got to do it himself. So we discussed this. There's a lot in Sfarim about this particular question. Halavai, we had time to look at it all, but there's a lot about this issue of Sfira Sa'omer and Shemei Ka'oneh. But one could say that Gemara doesn't have to pose a problem. First of all, saying that there's a mitzvah sphere on everyone doesn't necessarily mean to suggest everyone has to pronounce the words himself. It could simply mean that in contrast to something like Yovel, where the Torah says to count, and we mean on the communal level that the Beis Din keeps track of the years, so here we don't mean that. We mean every individual should be doing his own counting. Every individual, we discussed a little bit the question of where women fit into this. It's a somewhat complex discussion. So either it's every man or every Jewish adult man or every Jewish adult man or woman. But either way, it's an individual obligation rather than something that's on Beis Din. So that shouldn't necessarily mean that Shemei Ka'oneh is not a viable path. If Shemei Ka'oneh is viable for other mitzvahs, it could still be just as viable for Sfira Sa'omer even after such a drasha. Then we could add on to the mix that we have two possible ways of understanding what Shemei Ka'oneh means. Does it mean that you are literally doing it yourself? Or does it mean that you are fulfilling it through somebody else, which maybe is a little bit less so? So there's some room to question just how much that Gemara impacts the sugya of Shemei Ka'oneh. But let's assume for now that Shemei Ka'oneh does work for Sfira Sa'omer. And again, to clarify, we're not talking about the situation that's most relevant to more people, which is the bracha. The bracha of Sfira Sa'omer, that for sure Shemei Ka'oneh could work. So if somebody finds himself in a position where he can't recite the bracha because he missed a day, or he may have missed a day, so then it's a good option for him to listen to a bracha from somebody else, and that everyone would agree Shemei Ka'oneh could work. What we're talking about is the sentence itself, that for whatever reason you don't want to be the one to actually say the words. Today is the fifth day of Yomer, today is the 12th day, whatever it is. You want to listen to somebody else say that. So yes, the assumption is there also that Shemek Onah could work. Now, on the question of why missing a day is a problem, so we discussed yesterday Rav Soloveitchik's innovative understanding that was different from the traditional understanding, that we take into account the view of the Bahag, that it's a problem to miss a day. And many understand the issue to be that Sfiras HaOmer is one big unit, according to him. And therefore, if you're missing any part, you can't really fulfill the mitzvah. So once you miss a day, that's it, you're out of the game. So you can no longer make a bracha on Sfiras HaOmer. And Rav Soloveitchik and a few others, including the Baba Jerebi, understood it differently. And they saw the issue was that really Sfiras 49 separate mitzvahs. So therefore, it should not be a problem, theoretically, to count a day if you missed the day before. So why is it a problem, according to the Baha'i? So the problem is that we are looking for the definition of counting. That counting is more than just saying numbers. Counting means there has to actually be a progression from one day to the next. So if you miss a day, you aren't able to count because you don't have that system to keep building on. So that's the issue, according to the Rav, and it had many, many nafkaminas. Just about every issue in Sfiras HaOmer could be understood two ways, depending on which explanation you favored here. But part of the impact of Rav Soloveitchik's interpretation is to split between keeping up the count and fulfilling the mitzvah. So therefore, for example, according to the Rav, the reason you count during the daytime, you don't make a bracha, but that allows you to resume counting after that with a bracha, is because when you count during the day, it's not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is only at night. So that's why you don't make a bracha. Okay, that's very well and good, but then why do you count in the first place? So you count because it keeps a structure going. And therefore, you can pick up the next day with a bracha because you didn't fulfill the mitzvah the previous day, but you did keep the count going. So that explains a bunch of things. It also explains why a bar mitzvah boy, if he's been counting before his bar mitzvah, can keep counting with a bracha after he becomes bar mitzvah, because even if he was not fulfilling a mitzvah in those days because he was a katan, but he was establishing a framework so that once he became a bar mitzvah, he could keep going from that point on. Okay, so far so good? Yes, everyone's pretty much up to speed. So now, you ready for a really lengthy question? Okay, let's consider the following. Let's say, you know, Jed is the assistant I rely on him for everything, as we said. So let's say I want to rely on him for Sfiras HaOmer also. So sometimes I say, Jed, I'm too busy to count Sfira, I'm going to have you count and I'm going to listen to you. Okay, I use Shomei Ka'one for Sfiras HaOmer. Okay? Let's say I did this for a week from day 7 to day 14. And then it just got too complicated to coordinate being in the same place the whole time. So I went back to counting on my own. Okay? Then I'm doing very well at counting on my own. And on day 23, Jed sends me a WhatsApp. And he says, oh, you should just know that I forgot the Sfira the previous day, so I'm out of the game. So maybe we should say, uh-oh, now I'm in trouble. Right, why am I in trouble? Or why might I be in trouble? Can you follow it? Why would that situation possibly put me in trouble? Yes? Okay. At an earlier stage.
Yeah, right. And therefore, if he missed it, it could be, if you hold that retroactive, then it was all lost. So then your previous counting would also be mistaken.
Okay, you hear that? You hear the issue? That if missing a day means that the whole mitzvah was no good, so that should work backwards also. So it means that when he missed a day on day 23, so none of his days were actually a mitzvah. And when I counted through him, let's say day 8, so I fulfilled my mitzvah through him. Turns out it wasn't actually a mitzvah. So should we say now, through no fault of my own, I am knocked out, and that's a problem for me? What do you think? So who's up first? Then we're first, yeah?
Just to clarify, the case that's assuming that the person you were relying on to fulfill your kiyum did not say it without a bracha the next morning.
Right. So this is really out.
Is it?
Yeah, correct. Okay, Daniel, would you want to add?
It depends both on your understanding of Shemak Shemekona and Rishios Omer.
That's why it's a Shemak question.
Yeah, so if you hold that every mitzvah, every day is its own mitzvah, then presumably, then it would be fine because his previous count was still valid. He just got knocked out now, so the fact that he relied on him before would be fine because then it was never retroactively nullified.
Okay, so just to clarify what you're saying, right, that Rav Soloveitchik's whole premise here is that it's not all one mitzvah. The issue is only building on a missed day. So, yes, that affects the future, but it should never retroactively disqualify previous days.
And I think that's also the Ben-Etam, as in terms of each day means some mitzvah.
Well, that's if one assumes that's what Ben-Etam means. That the question, why does the Bahag have his chumrah that you can't miss a day? So some say it's because he thinks it's one big mitzvah, and Ben-Etam thinks it's every day separate. But here, Rav Soloveitchik is saying more than that, that even the Bahag every day is separate. But the reason I can't count if I miss a day is because of the framework.
Okay, so then
it comes out that there's no retroactive disqualification.
Yeah, and then even if you hold that it is a retroactive disqualification, it's like a different understanding of the Bahag, then depending on which idea of Shemek only you hold by, it might also affect whether you consider it as if you were being. You said the words like you did it.
Right.
If you say it like a sort of like tosos, you said it as if you just said the words. So presumably you did the brachos every night, he didn't. And then in terms of the other 2 days, I guess like whether you're yotzei kitulis through speaking or it's as if you said the words, I guess it might be considered that if you retroactively nullified. That I'm not so sure about. But in according to tosos understanding, it's as if you said the words yourself.
Okay.
So your probably will be fine even if you hold it, his was retroactively nullified.
Okay, very good. So, Gilad, what do you want to say?
I think, just to clarify,
go for it.
What I'm saying is that if you're, fulfilling the mitzvah itself, that everyone's so supposed to, then you wouldn't be yotzei for the, you'd be retroactively disqualified, because if it's fulfillment of the mitzvah, then it's incumbent upon Jed finishing it all the way. But if it's just about you saying it, right. If it's you're actually saying it, then
as far as Shemek Ona is concerned, as far as Sphere is concerned.
Firstly, Shemek Ona.
Okay.
If it's about you just fulfill it, then you get the mitzvah for it. You're not actually doing anything, but that's important from the fact that Jed has to finish the rest of it. Because that mitzvah is only you only get that mitzvah. Jed only gets that mitzvah either way if he finishes it.
All right, so that gets complicated in a couple of levels. So basically, just to try to say it this way, so one issue from a Shemaya Kohen perspective seems like this could connect to our previous question, that if you're Yotzei the Mitzvah with the other guys, so then that's where our concerns come up. But if we say that it's like you're saying the words, you should be better off, and that should be okay, except that it's not 100% a slam dunk, because we've seen that Shemaya Ka'ona does require that the person be a Mechuyav B'davar, the person who's doing the talking. And that was a challenge to the whole concept of words being considered speech when you're just hearing them, because it shouldn't matter. So that Bechlal was a question, but that seems to affect us here also, that yes, on the one hand, it shouldn't be any worse than my just saying the words myself, having heard them from Jed. But since in general we do require him to be a Bar Chiyuva, things get a little complicated. But then from a Sfira Sa'omer perspective, so it could have been a problem, but the Rav saves us twice. So this we could say during the 25th anniversary celebration of the Rav, mentioned he saves us twice on this issue. Why? Because one way in which he saves us is according to him, there's no retroactive disqualification. So therefore, if the person who I was yotzei with, he misses a day, so he's got a problem from here on in. But all the days until now were good. So So I don't have to worry that when I was being Yotze with him, before he dropped out of the game, that those days were no good, because according to the Rav, the days before are going to be fine. So that's one way in which he saves us. But the second way in which he saves us is that even in Timsi Lomar, it wasn't fine. And even if it turns out that that was not a Kiyum Mitzvah, but part of the Rav's whole Chiddush is that we can bifurcate between the Kiyum Mitzvah and maintaining the structure. So maybe it wasn't a mitzvah, but it shouldn't be any worse than counting during the day, or counting before Shkia, or any of the other situations that we spoke about. It should at least be valid as a placeholder to keep the structure going, and therefore, again, it should be enough to allow me to keep counting after that. Okay, so far so good? So that's a pretty labored question, which combines all these elements. I'll just mention one more idea while we're talking about Sfira and Shemaya Ka'one. You know, of course, as depressed as you may be, if you forget to count for a day and you get knocked out of the bracha, so that's a problem by itself. But of course, it's the rabbi's nightmare, right? Because if you're the rabbi and this happens, so then it's embarrassing, because every night when they turn to you to count Sfira for the shul, so what are you going to do? If you've been knocked out of the game at that point. So there are some discussions about this. One discussion is, first of all, does Kavod Abrios play a role in such things when you have to be publicly embarrassed for having forgotten Sfira? What kind of a situation is that going to be? If the shul every night says, calls on the rabbi, and then it turns out he's got a decline because he fell off the chart. So that's already awkward. But there's another possibility that's discussed by some Achronim, that maybe Arvus could work here in an interesting way. Now, what does Arvus do to Shemaya Ka'one? We didn't speak that much about it, but basically Arvus expands Shemaya Ka'one in an interesting way. That normally, if I want to be Motzi you in Kiddush, so I can make Kiddush on your behalf, if I am obligated in Kiddush to the same degree as you are. If we're both obligated in Kiddush Menat Torah, so I can be Motziyu in Kiddush. But what if I already made Kiddush? So I'm not obligated to make Kiddush twice. So how am I able to make Kiddush on your behalf? You're obligated to hear it, and I'm not. So the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, no, that's okay. Because of the principle of Arvis, of Kol Yisrael, Arevim Zebazeh, Zelazeh, so I am responsible for you, and if you have not fulfilled your mitzvah, that on some level keeps my chiyuv alive. So therefore, I am able to make Kiddush on your behalf, even though I don't really have a responsibility to make Kiddush a second time, but since I am somebody who is basically obligated to Kiddush, I'm a bar chiyuva in Kiddush, that's enough to place me in a position to be motzi you in Kiddush. But my general obligation, together with the fact that you need my help, so I can be motzi you in Kiddush. So what about this situation? Could this also be an arvus situation? Could we say that the rabbi theoretically is knocked out of Sfiras Omer because he missed a day? But he is a theoretical bar chiyuva, somebody who's in general chayiv in Sfiras Omer, and since he needs to help the tzibur in counting on their behalf, so therefore it's arvus in a different direction, because it's only his own disconnect from his own personal mitzvah that knocks him out because he missed a day, but counting on behalf of everyone else, that should be like making Kiddush a second time. So there are those who suggest that that could work, and that maybe that's helpful here. It's a little bit of an imperfect fit, because, like we mentioned before, really it's the bracha that we're talking about here. He's not really being motzi people in Sfiras Omer. If that's the way it worked, then perhaps that would be a little bit more of a clear case. But everyone goes on to count Sfiras Omer themselves after the rabbi does it. It's really more of just a public fulfillment to the mitzvah. So it's a little bit of a bigger stretch to say that that's actually him being motzi to people. Although who knows, maybe there's somebody in shul who can't do it on their own and they're relying on him, so maybe that's enough. But tziruf, the fact that the Baha'i's position was subject to machlokas already, so maybe put those two together, or put three together, maybe that helps a little bit. Theoretically, you could also say that this communal counting, so that the framework has been provided. Here he's counting on behalf of the tzibur when he does this, when he makes this big public bracha and counting. And that has its own structure, and even though he personally fell off the chart, but as far as maintaining the communal unit, maybe that should be considered independent of him. Again, a little bit of a stretch, but we have to dig deeply to provide public to prevent public embarrassment here, so maybe that's a possible model.
Like, I guess the question sort of based off like previous thesis. Do we talk about sex fake
So that's also interesting. We talked about it yesterday, that it should be Lakula, that according to the traditional understanding, before it's obvious it's understanding, that's what's at work here. The reason that you can keep counting if you miss a day, as long as you count during the day, is because of the Sfeik Sfeika, that a Sfeik, maybe it's okay to miss a day, because it's Makobis Rishonim. And if you say it's not okay to miss a day, but maybe it's not called missing a day if you count during the day. So combining those two sfeikas together, that's what allows us to resume counting with a bracha. Now it's an interesting application, because really we can say sfeik sfeika lakula. And here, this is really a chumrah, that there's a little bit of a disconnect here, because emotionally we feel bad, understandably we feel bad if we are left out of the bracha, we feel like we're being punished. But really, it's an expression of kula, that sofei brachos lahakil, so not making the bracha is really a kula. We feel like it's a chumrah to say you can't make the bracha because we don't want to miss out on it, understandably. So therefore, it's an unusual thing. Sveik sveik are really lachumrah, really to get us back in the game. Although, as we pointed out, it's really a pretty strong sveik sveika, because if the whole logic of sveik sveika is statistics, you combine the odds. So here it's really very strong, because you could say that maybe it's okay to miss a day, and if it's not okay to miss a day, maybe counting during the day is not called missing. That's pretty compelling, because it's the Baha'i who says it's a problem to miss a day, but the Baha'i is the one who also lets you count during the day. So there's a pretty safe case to say that you should be covered according to everybody. It's even stronger.
Yeah,
it comes out to pretty much an absolute. Okay, so there's a lot more to say about Sfiras HaOmer and Shemitah Olam, but insert your Baal Tosef joke here. Okay, so let's start talking about Baal Tosef. So here, this is a big sugya, so hopefully by tomorrow you'll see a little more of Marmon Kamos. We're going to try to get our feet wet with it a little bit now and continue it tomorrow. So the Torah tells us actually in two places in Sefer Dvarim that we cannot add on to the Torah. And we need to figure out what in the world that means. What would be involved? So before we see anything, what do you think the words mean? When the Torah says, don't add on to it, what does it mean? Let's start with the first reference. The reference in Vayis Chanan. Trick me again. Okay, the reference in Vayis Chanan. What's the language of the Torah? Lo sosifu al hadavar asher anochi mitzaveschem v'lo sigru mimenu l'shmor es mitzvos Hashem Elokeichem asher anochi mitzaveschem. So what does the message comprise here? Yeah, Jed?
Mitzvos, don't add mitzvos.
Okay, so one possibility is don't add mitzvos. So you have 613, and that's it. Don't add on anymore. What else could it mean? Yes, Sav?
Don't add on to a mitzvah.
Okay, so what would it mean to add on to a mitzvah?
Extra batim.
Okay, so... Okay, so that's a good example, but if you want to try to say anything like that, what would something like that be? Like what makes that a good candidate for this Isser?
Something that's
Like, why would you pick that as an example? What's attractive about that as a possible? Well, I guess I think where you go, you feel like more confident than that.
It was more like a question I asked, like, where do you draw the line between like ethics and interpretation?
Okay, so that's a very fair question, right? So, you know, where exactly in general do we draw a line between me doing something in a better way and doing something in a way that is additional or the code is prohibiting? So that's definitely a fair question to keep on the table. But this question, what I think what maybe I was getting at is that if you have a mitzvah that has some clear numerical component, you know, that has, let's say, by which I mean not that the number is necessarily a part of the message, but that, maybe if there's something which has a number of parts that we can count, so then we can use that number as a reference point and say, okay, no more and no fewer. Anything else? Yes, Jed?
Don't add words to certain formulations that are needed to be said. Like for
that,
like
pretty wordy formulations. So that
yeah. So like I guess by like the decorum declaration, don't add words to that.
Okay. Do we see any indication that that's what we're talking about here?
I think the Ramban was talking about adding words to.
Okay, so we'll have to see that. Essie?
Don't claim that the Torah says something that doesn't.
Ah, okay. So that's an important perspective we'll have to see. Anything else? Well, let's also focus the question a little more. So here we are in Lulav HaGazel. Believe it or not, we are learning about Lulav topics. So if we were to consider this specifically in the framework of Lulav and Esrog, what could it mean? Yes?
It could mean having extra men.
Okay, bringing in another heretic, yeah.
Or focus whether, I guess we call it having like a...
Okay, so, right, which could be an example of that problem, right? So maybe if you bring in another type, what else? Well,
more of the same
type. Well, yeah, so what about that? What if it's not another type, but it's more of the same?
Might be a problem.
So what if I have two of them? Okay. What if I do the, what if Chazal were to say do the mitzvah twice a day? Or if somebody were to decide to do the mitzvah twice a day, shouldn't get Chazal involved just yet. Okay, we'll have to see. Any other suggestions? Okay, so just to bring us into the sugya, we'll still take a step back in a second, but by now you've seen the Gemara and Lamed Aleph and Beis in Sukkah, which, without using the exact words, but gets us into the sugya, and this is one of the home locations for this now. So the Gemara says on the top of Lamed Aleph and Beis, Amar Mar, this is the fifth line from the top of the page, Amar Mar, Kishem, Shein, Pochsin Mehen, just like you can't subtract from the minin, kach ein mosifin alehen, so too you cannot add on to them. Well, pshita, isn't that obvious? So ma'u detema, what could you have thought? Ho'ov amar Rabbi Yehuda lulav tzarech eged, since Rabbi Yehuda tells us that a lulav needs to be bound together. So since that's the case, maybe the imaisi min acharina, if you were to bring another one, so hay l'chudei koi, hay l'chudei koi. So you might think it doesn't actually combine, and therefore that's not considered to be a hosafa. Kamash malan, that's what we're being taught here. So does this Gemara tell us anything about the parameters of Al-Tosef? Off the surface, what would you think? Did you learn anything from that passage about what Al-Tosef would or wouldn't be? Any thoughts, Jebediah?
It's interesting that it starts with Baltegra.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So what would you think about that? What's interesting about that?
I think it's just the fact that it seems like it's more chomer to almost kal chomer, that bal tibra is more of a much bigger deal, and then from that we can learn out that so too and also is going to be Adam is also going to be initiated.
So yes, and what's also interesting is that bal tigra by itself is something that needs to be addressed for different reasons. Because bal tigra, you could say, is kind of self-understood. And if the Torah says, do a mitzvah, so why would I think doing less is okay? And we have to figure out, when is bal tigra a chiddush? And under what circumstances is it a chiddush? And that, couldn't this Gemara have existed, at least the beginning, without there being? Let's say the Torah had never said bal tigra. Let's remove bal tigra from the Torah. Right, so let's say that had never been there. So would I think it's okay to do less for the mitzvah? When you tell me in post in Mehen, is that only because of bal tigra, or is that because simply not what the mitzvah asks? Kila?
Is this hard for doing part of a mitzvah? You know you won't be able to do the entire mitzvah, should you even try to do some of it?
Okay, so that's a fair question, that there are circumstances where you could hear it being a discussion. But generally, just as a matter of basic working understandings, you would probably think that, yeah, the mitzvah is asking me to do this, so I shouldn't do any less. Daniel?
Well, it seems like more of a warning for the basement, which we have more power in general, and sort of limiting that total power.
So you're saying again that there could be contexts in which maybe something might happen, but as a general rule, right, as a general rule, we want to know how do I do lulav under normal circumstances. So presumably, if it's supposed to be this much, that means it shouldn't be less. So this line that kashem shein popsim mehen kachim mosifin, that could have been a pretty big chiddush, because it's not at all obvious that doing more is just as bad as doing less. It's only obvious when you see this as an expression of bal tigra and bal tosif and bal tigra being parallel isurim. Now, if you saw Tosfos, there's actually a different way to equate adding to subtracting without necessarily looking to the pasuk of bal tosif and bal tigra. What's that? Say kol hamosif Gareya, that if there's a general attitude that too much is just as bad as too little, and that adding has the impact of subtracting even though you're putting more stuff out there. Like we say with animals, kohayase kenotel doming, that whatever it is extra is as if it's subtracted. So then, okay, maybe that's what the Gemara is getting at, not necessarily the psukim of bal tosif and bal tigra. But just like bal tigra also reflects an intuitive principle, so too, because klamosif gareya, that's also equally intuitive. So the same way, when the Torah says do this way, you wouldn't think to do it less, you wouldn't think to do it more either. So we have to figure that out. Yes, sir?
So that seems that the Kelkos is sort of a getim in a Torah, bal tigra?
Not necessarily. Maybe I don't think you'd have to go that far. I think you just say that it is a form of hero.
By definition, it's
true. Yeah, that maybe that they're the same idea. That messing with the numbers in either direction is simply not what we're asking for. Yes, sir.
What was the Halloween Gemara again? About when it says Peshitta?
So then it sounds like the concern about Tosif, maybe that's this important detail, that maybe bal tosif is only a possibility when there's some clear area and you're adding on within that area. But if there's nothing to bring things together, so then maybe that shouldn't be called mosif. Maybe these are just separate entities in the world.
So
that's what it seems like, yeah. Now this is going to be relevant. Did you guys see the Ritva yet here? So we'll see that tomorrow. The Ritva commenting over here brings up another issue which we'll have to talk about. So this question could come up in Sukkah also. Not in Masechta Sukkah, but in the Sukkah. So how could you have Baal Tosef theoretically? How could you talk about Baal Tosef by the mitzvah of Sukkah? Yes, Daniel? Okay, so maybe the eighth day, that constitutes Baal Tosef because you've taken the mitzvah and you have expanded its time frame. And that's clearly different than what we have by Lulav. So why don't we say that a Lulav on the eighth day is a better example of Baal Tosef rather than 5 minutes? And maybe it is on some level. But clearly this is a different kind of example. Right, to keep doing the mitzvah in its normal way for an extra day is different than adding on a fifth aspect to the Lulav and Esrog. But beyond that, let's also make another point. So, okay, so it's a problem to sit in the sukkah on the eighth day. That's what it sounds like. So what if you don't do it on the eighth day, but instead you do it on your birthday, which is in April? So let's say if you sit in the sukkah an extra day, that is several months later, is that the same issue? Well, what do you tell me? So it's about, so clearly the difference would seem to be that it's not attached to the main entity. Now, does that tell us something about Baal Tosef? Well, first of all, are we so sure that that's not a problem? So this is a discussion we'll see. But if one says that it's not a problem, is it because it's not connected the way an extra min would be connected if it was part of the same egged? Or, Daniel's language doesn't look like, maybe our whole concern here with the Shmini Vesukah was never really about actual Baal Tosef, but maybe it's about Nira Kemosef. Maybe it's about giving the appearance of adding on, and maybe that's where it's easier to address that if you're detached. Gilad?
So in the case of Sukkah, so an extra day, whether it's the day after Sukkah or a month later, the Torah specifically tells us to sit in the Sukkah for a certain amount of time.
Right.
And if it's a completely different, if it's completely later and you have the right amount of time, as the Torah said, then it's clear that you're following what the Torah told you to do. But if you add on a day right after, and it's not clear that you're following exactly what the Torah told you to do.
So I understand what you're saying, that because since the days can stand on their own, so then you fit the Torah's description with those days. But theoretically, you could have said that they're still the same, that maybe we should look at the whole year as an entity, and that therefore let's see them as bound together. And over the course of this year, I sat in the sukkah for 8 days, so maybe that's also not what the Torah describes. I see the difference, but we don't know for sure that that's the difference. So that's something we'll have to take a look at also. So let's, before coming back to this, let's address one of the other points, which we've talked about a little bit in the past, so I don't remember how much we've said about this, but let's just clarify it for our purposes. So somebody mentioned adding on a mitzvah should be Baal Tosef. So, isn't that a big problem for Orthodox Jews? Those are two, for example, but what about the whole... Right, what about the whole body of rabbinic law? So what allows us to observe mitzvos d'rabbanan? What allows the rabbis to put in mitzvos d'rabbanan in the first place? Sorry? Okay, so what does Los Sosser do for us? Sorry? Okay, what does that, how does that help us?
That says that Hashem told us that we should some level create together, like Yidarim, and with ways to turn, prevent ourselves from committing a serum, so essentially giving the power to the Rabban, you know, to make together for the Torah.
Okay, so that's one approach, right? And who says this? The Ramban and Chumash mentions this kind of approach. You find this in other places also. That maybe since the Torah itself says this is something you're supposed to do, so then that is not considered adding on. That is following the instruction. We have to see how much it helps us, because maybe that only addresses that which is in that category of a siag or a gedder. And here the pasuk that's really relevant is the pasuk we're reading the Shabbos actually. Ushmarti mismishmarti. So the Gemara in Yevamah says, "Esu mishmeres lemishmarti," that you should create a safeguard for my prohibitions. So that tells us that there is an inyan to do that. Now, in terms of Lo Sasser, which we spoke about at length earlier in the year, so we should also point out the way I think this comes together. Other sources sound a little differently, but I think this is a simple approach, that Lo Sasser is what gives the rabbis power in general to be authoritative. The reason we are bound to rabbinic authority is because the Torah tells us not to deviate. That's how the Rambam, understands. But the significance of the pasuk of Ushmarti Mishmarti is telling us that there is an ideal that the Torah will be protected with extra rules. And therefore, that's a commandment to the rabbis, which they use the power vested in them by Lo Sasser to realize. So one is the directive, and the other is what makes it work. Lo Sasser is what makes it work, and Shmartem is the directive to do that. And as Masil Sharon points out, this is true even for individuals, that if you see yourself that you are vulnerable to a certain temptation, so then you should create a safeguard for yourself personally, and that's also included in this direction, and that doesn't involve Lo Sasser. That doesn't involve your obedience to the rabbinic body. It involves your own awareness that you need to make a safeguard. So you could say that this is what makes it possible. It's not Baal Tosef, because the Torah itself says this is the system, these are the rules. Now, the Rambam has a different approach. Right, we discussed this earlier in the year, that and you saw it today in the Makaris, hopefully. So what is the Rambam's approach?
Anything that's not permanent is okay?
Well, not necessarily, because even things that are permanent could be okay, as long as what?
It's all directed towards
Rabbanim. Right, to my clear, two people talking at the same time. They clear that what?
It's a warning against the rabbis, especially that they should make their Rabbanim clear that the Rabbanim are not their righteous.
Okay, so that's what it sounds like. Now, the Ramban mentions this also. The Ramban just brings two points together. Right? The Ramban says that since we have a directive to create a gather, and it's made clear that that's what this is, that this is a gather, so then you're not in violation of Baal Tosef. So the Rambam focuses specifically on that part. And the Rambam says that it's necessary that it be clear that this was not part of the Torah's legislation. And the Ravid takes great issue with this. The Ravid takes great issue with the idea that you're risking Baal Tosef otherwise. He doesn't think that there's really a possibility of Baal Tosef. He thinks that we have this all the time, that it's not necessarily so obvious where the mitzvah comes from, and that that's not a violation of Baal Tosef. And he focuses Baal Tosef on adding on to lulav, things like that, adding on to a part of the mitzvah. But having the new mitzvah itself is not Baal Tosef. Now, this is an issue. I think we spoke about this, that this is one explanation, the Rambam's position is one explanation why we have a rule of Safek Rabbanan Lakula, that we need to have built into the system differences so that we should understand what is Daraisa and what is Rabbanan. And I think we speculated at the time, it's interesting to ask, so how effective has this system been? So on the one hand, if it's so important to differentiate, it seems like we're in trouble, because there are a lot of mitzvahs that we don't know, that we argue about whether they're Daraisa or Rabbanan, and their entire sfarim devoted to trying to clarify one way or the other. So if that's so important, so why should that be okay? On the other hand, the system does seem to accomplish this when it works, because you can't really have any serious discussion of the halacha about any topic, because without, I'm saying without any halacha topic, without first clarifying whether it's Daraisa or Drabbanan. So the fact that the halacha forces you to pay attention to this that does seem to be a good fulfillment of this idea that because it has so many halachic implications, Safik Lakula and many others, so in order to address any halachic issue, we're going to have to first spend time reminding ourselves whether it's Daraisa or Drabanan. So that does seem to go to the goal that the Rambam's talking about. So the Ragged subjection, though, is well taken. Because what about this first part? So there's so much that we don't know whether it's Daraisa or Drabanan. Seems like, according to the Rambam, we're in trouble. All right, how do we address that? So how can we have a Klal Yisrael that has so many undefined mitzvahs when this is a potential mass violation of Baal Tosef, whether it's our fault or whoever in the chain of transmission let that happen? That seems to be a big problem. And this indeed was the question the Or HaSameach asks on the Rambam. The Or HaSameach takes the Ravid's position, says he thinks the Ravid has to be right, because otherwise Klal Yisrael is in trouble. Particularly the Tanaim are in trouble, for example, because often the Mishnah will tell you a certain din with a pasuk, and then the Gemara will ask, what, a pasuk, isn't this a din derabanan? And then the Gemara will say, yeah, it is, across Machta Balma. So you're telling me, says Yor Sameach, that for all those centuries between the Mishnah and the Gemara, so the Tanaim were responsible for creating confusion and violating Baal Tosef? And it was only when the Amoraim later came around and said, oh, it must be Yitzhak HaSmachta, that they fixed things? Very hard to believe. So maybe that will be a question we will pick up with tomorrow. Okay, so we'll start from there. For now, who wants to daven mincha for us? Do we have any volunteers? Yossi, you look like you're interested in daven mincha for us. Okay, Asher, Yishev, Yitzhak, Ujjah, Lufa, Salah.